Okay, hello everybody, and welcome to Investing with IBD for August 7th, 2019. I'm your host, Arusha Pierce, and with me in the studio today is Alyssa Corum, multimedia content editor, star of the Stock Market Today show, and now star of the new weekly show, Investing Strategies. Welcome, Alyssa.
Thanks for having me. You're too flattering, calling me a star.
But... And you're on the other side of the glass now. Usually, Alyssa's the one who's like kind of like the puppet master, tell me what to do. But now she's in the hot seat.
Yeah, I'm usually the one asking the questions, so... This is a little different for me. Now I'm on the other side.
Oh, no, it's going to be fun.
Yeah.
On today's podcast, we're going to talk about the markets, missing out on some big stocks, a little bit of regret, and we'll talk about some current stocks that are setting up and fighting this market trend. And speaking of market trend, we are in a correction. A lot has changed since last week's episode.
Mm, that's right. Yeah. Monday was pretty ugly, and I think a definite shift in the tone, a big character change with the NASDAQ slicing below the 50-day like it did.
For sure, for sure. And, you know, even last week we had a bad Monday, and then we started coming back, and then by Thursday we're like, uh-oh. You know, once the trade wars kind of took that next level, more tariffs coming in, and that's when we went into a correction. So you have to take the correction seriously. Right, you have to play defense now. We have no idea what's going to happen. So make sure you're patient and wait for a falter day, what we call a falter day here, which is a market signal letting us know that now the market has a chance to go mm-hmm. back into an uptrend.
Yeah, that's right. And I'm sure a lot of the audience already knows this, but I think it's worth repeating that when you see the market in a correction, that's not the time to be buying stocks that are on sale. You right. might be hearing the pundits say that on Wall Street. And yes, a lot of prices have come down a lot, but we don't really know when the bleeding will truly stop, even though we saw this upside reversal with the S&P and NASDAQ today.
Right.
So we want to wait for that follow through.
That's true. So it's day number two of an attempted rally right now. So the earliest we could get a follow through day is on Friday. That's the amazing thing. These markets can change around a lot quicker than you can imagine. But that being said, you know, they can go down a lot further than you can imagine,
right.
too. So we're not trying to catch the bottom here. We're going to wait. We're going to be patient and let the market prove itself again before we put more of our hard-earned money back to work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but in the meantime, and we'll get more into this in the third segment, you want to be setting up your watch list, getting ready for when that uptrend does happen because you want to be ready.
Exactly.
Right when it does happen.
Yeah, and once you learn how to protect yourself during corrections, you start to learn that corrections are opportunities. Because just like what you were saying, Alyssa, you're building that watch list, you're waiting, and then when the market turns around, you have this fresh new watch list, and it's a new opportunity to get in some leading stocks. Maybe some of those stocks that you've missed in the past, it might be your chance. So you don't want to drift too far away in this. Now, one index that has been lagging and continues to lag is the Russell 2000. The index for all the small caps, it continues not to do very well. We would want to see that index improve because that will let us know that there's more speculation coming into the market. And then finally, just a reminder, we are in earnings season and there can be some big gap ups as we've seen with a few stocks today, but also some big gap downs. I think New Relic was down like, I don't know, 20% today or something like that.
Ouch.
So just make sure you know when your stocks are reporting earnings.
That's right. And you can go back and listen to the episodes where Arusha and our guests talked about how to handle stocks during earnings season, whether that's playing the option or looking at these opportunities with the gap ups. But we do have this cloud hanging over our heads right now with the current market conditions that we're seeing. So keep that in mind when looking at some of these gap ups.
Exactly. So just make sure you're playing defense. So now, Alyssa, let's get into a little bit of your story.
All right.
And a little bit of your background because, you've been here for now at IBD for
5 years.
Wow, time has flown.
Yeah, I just had the 5 year mark about a month ago, and it really has flown by. I'll make this somewhat short and sweet, but I went to Southern Methodist University in Dallas. Bill O'Neill's alma mater, and I was actually able to meet him the fall of my freshman year. Back then, that was in 2010.
Did you know who he was before that, when you before you entered into SMU, or you just learned?
I didn't, okay. Actually.
Which makes sense.
Yeah. But I was a journalism and finance double major, and every year he would come on campus to give a talk.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's when I met him, my fall of my freshman year, you know, made a point to, after he spoke, you know, shake his hand individually and like that, things like that. And so we kind of carried on this rapport, I guess you could say, throughout my years at SMU. When I was a sophomore, then I was accepted into the Bill O'Neill Scholarship Program. So it was like the IBD Bill O'Neill Scholarship. I had that as a business journalism student. And so that made me want to work extra hard.
Yeah.
And at that time, I didn't know that upon graduation, I would be working essentially for Bill O'Neill as a reporter at Investors Business Daily. So it all kind of came full circle for me. And, you know, I think the cool thing is that Bill O'Neill invested in me,
mm-hmm.
and my education. And so working for this company, I want to make sure he gets a good return on his investment.
Yes.
So.
And I'm sure he's very happy so far. You've been here for 5 years and been doing great things. Now, you had almost like an impromptu interview at one point when you were getting to know Bill when he was visiting the campus. Maybe it was their senior year or so, right? Where he started introducing you to some of the other members of the company, right?
Yes, actually. So the spring break of my senior year for my journalism honors project, I decided to come out to California to interview alumni in the media industry.
Very nice.
So that was another opportunity that I got to meet up with Bill. And then he was, of course, asking me about my plans after college and everything. And I said, I'm really interested in video, broadcast, journalism. But he brought in my now boss, Chris Gessel, for an impromptu interview. And, you know, it went really well. And so it turned into a job. And when I started at IBD, we had a little bit of video presence. But now I just think it's crazy how far we've come in terms of video. And now this new series starting, Investing Strategies, which just premiered on August 5th. So I'll be flying back and forth for the next 5 weeks to New York, shooting out of the NASDAQ market site in Times Square, interviewing a lot of great investing experts, market technicians, investment strategists, ETF experts, and more, and giving everyone some nuggets of knowledge with that IBD perspective along the way as well. So it's really exciting.
Yeah, it is super exciting. And it's pretty amazing just the number of opportunities, too. You mentioned about video not being here when you started or not that big, and look how it's grown.
Yes.
That's definitely a pretty cool.
Yeah, it's very exciting. This podcast is another thing that I think is really great that we've been doing. So we're just reaching our audience now in so many different formats and so many different ways, and I think that's a really cool thing.
Absolutely. So the market is still in correction, but during the meantime, you want to listen to both keep listening to the podcast, but now you're going to have another way to learn a lot of these concepts, especially during a correction, what to do. You remember to be patient, wait for the market and the stocks to set up before becoming aggressive. So let's take a quick break, but when we return, we're going to talk about investing regrets. There are some great stories here, and it's part of the game, right? You are going to make a lot of mistakes. You're going to lose sleep or some of these big winners that you have. And so we're going to share some of our biggest regrets on missing out on some great opportunities in the stock market and what we learned from them. So stay tuned.
Hey everyone, it's Alyssa with Investors Business Daily. I just want to let you know to tune in every Monday for a new episode of Investing Strategies right here from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. On next week's show, we're going to talk all about the software sector and the best ways to play it. So make sure to watch.
We're back here with Alyssa Corum on Investing with IBD. So, Alyssa, let's get into some regrets.
That's right. I guess this is a therapy session or something. Need to air this regret. But, you know, it is a learning lesson, so we will definitely incorporate that part of it as well. And so we're going to talk about Netflix. And I guess what does give me a little bit of comfort is the fact that Netflix hasn't been doing all that well as of late. But let's rewind the clock to 2016, when I was still pretty early here in my days at IBD primarily, covering the news aspect of companies and less about the actual technicals and, you know, getting into the canned slim nitty gritty with a lot of these companies that I now am able to analyze. So I was hearing a lot of great things from analysts about Netflix entering international markets, really expanding their original content. And so they had the in canned slim, the new, this really game-changing thing that was happening. Reed Hastings had given the keynote speech at CES that January.
And you were there covering
the Consumer Electronics Show, CES. So I was just getting a lot of really great signals about what the company was doing. But unfortunately, the chart didn't look that good. But then it was April of 2016 that the stock was able to retake its 200-day line. But it wasn't actually it was forming a bigger cup with handle. It was kind of in the early stages of that at that time. But I made excuses for the stock, and I was just waiting. I had been watching it and waiting for it to clear the 200-day line so that I could have one less excuse for why I should be in it or shouldn't be in it. So I took that opportunity, and it obviously didn't work out, and I got shaken out.
So you cut at 8%, though. So you tried the stock, but the first rule that we all learn here, or when you read the book, cut at 8%, keep your losses.
Right.
So you at least did that.
I did.
Might not have been 8%, but you cut your losses.
Right. I did. But I bought it wrong. So I think you're trying to make me feel better about this, which I really appreciate. But that's why these chart patterns really are important. So it was then that I was kind of like, wow, there's a reason why we do this and why it works. And it's not enough just to see it above its moving averages. It has to be forming an actual base pattern. And, you know, it was one quarter later that earnings went from negative 45% to up 50% and just kept climbing and climbing and climbing and climbing. And
but so even then, at the 50%, it didn't break out at that point, too.
Exactly.
It was still going through its process.
So, yeah, the fundamentals and that story, it was starting to happen. And then it took a quarter or two more before the chart really caught up with that. But long story short, I played Netflix really wrong, so I missed out on a huge move with it going from 129 all the way up as much as 423. So that, you know, that hurts.
Yeah, it hurts for sure, and it's something you don't forget. You'll never forget, right? And
rookie mistake.
Yeah, and it's the mistake. Well, first buying improperly, but everyone's going to be doing that. When you first learn it, the other mistake was not getting back in again,
right?
Because eventually it did form a pattern. It gave you that opportunity that you've been waiting for, but you didn't buy at that point. Maybe you were busy. Maybe you just decided to pass on it for whatever reason, right? And then you missed out on this opportunity, right?
Yeah, that's a really good point.
And that's what a lot of people are new to this. They're going to go through, right? That's part of the process. Now, for me, one of the first big mistakes that I made years ago, and it was in the early 2000s, it was Skechers. And I bought Skechers, and I bought it somewhat properly out of a base. And I was up like 25% on the stock. And so here I think I'm a genius in the stock. And there. This is when I was in Boston and on Newberry Street. I was nearby there. It's a really nice kind of a lot of high-end retail stores. They opened up a Skechers store there. I'd go there every day and say, oh, yeah, there are people in the store. Yeah, I'm doing my research.
Just like Bill would.
Exactly, exactly. This was my price club. But I kept going there, but then the stock started to drop. So not only did I not sell at 25% when you're supposed to take most of your gains at 25%. I wrote it back down. I round-tripped it. There's another rule saying, okay, if you round-tripped it, don't let, you know,
double-digit gain turn into a loss.
Exactly.
Yep.
I didn't sell there, and I wrote it all the way down, probably like 70% down.
Oh, my gosh.
So,
oh.
Yeah, so, and so then I was like, oh, okay. Okay, that's why you take a 20% gain.
Right.
That's why you sell at a 7% loss, right? So I learned all these lessons. But that being said, I still did that a few times, made these kind of big, kind of colossal errors a few times before those rules really sunk in. Mm-hmm. And so you have to put your hand on the stove. You have to burn yourself
exactly.
A number of times before, at least for me, then I was like, oh, that's why Bill has that rule.
Right.
You know, before I was like, this is a dumb rule, you know. What is Bill?
Yeah.
Doing?
But with Skechers, you know, the tagline, it's the S, you should have thought, it's the S, it's the sell.
Yeah.
Sell.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
But, I know. Anyway.
Yeah. So that was one of those kind of key lessons that I still, you know, have never forgotten. But the key is we're all going to make mistakes, right? And that's part of the game. And that was one of the first things when I heard Bill talk, and this is back like in 2002 after the Skechers mistake. One thing he emphasized in the seminar was you're going to make a lot of mistakes and you just have to learn from them. And it was weird because I never heard anyone, especially in the financial world, talking about making mistakes, right?
Right.
And having a plan and risk management. But that's what was one of the big things that impressed me is him just kind of being more. It was more like Zen-like, right? You're going to make mistakes, learn from the mistakes, grow as a person, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really, really cool. And that's what kind of gave me the conviction to keep going.
Yeah. Same. And the rules, they really do benefit you. And once you do become really comfortable with them, it helps you so much in spotting stocks that you do feel like are worth buying, but knowing that the market conditions are in your favor, not making excuses
right.
Because you like it and you think it's going to go up. You know, it's an odds game, and you're looking at the data, you're looking at the facts to help inform your decisions.
Exactly, it's an odds game. It's a numbers game too. They're going to make have to take a lot of small losses, but the strategy works, and in the right time, those stocks are going to, when they break out, they work really, really well too.
That's right. Well, I guess we'll quickly continue this therapy session with a, you know, slightly different take with NVIDIA. So I know this one had been hot for a couple of years, and kudos to all of you. Were you ever in NVIDIA?
Yes, I was in NVIDIA a number of times.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, this was another rookie mistake. I guess 2016 was my year of the rookie mistakes, but this one was just I sat on the sidelines. I knew it was setting up.
Yeah.
But I didn't jump for it.
And you learned about NVIDIA once again at CES, right?
Yes, exactly. So lots of good things going for it. And then it turned into, you know, this huge move going from 33 back in 2016 all the way up to 281 in August of 2018. So that was another move that was hard to just watch. And it formed a couple of good bases after that, but it had just gone up so much that, you know, I think the thinking was how can this continue to keep going up after such a big move from 2016, and then it kept going up again in all of 2017. So just a big move that I sat out on. And so I think what that helped me learn was just to have the confidence to try. And with the rules on your side, you know, you're able to prevent having huge losses.
For sure.
So there's no need to be scared.
Yeah. And the market's always right. And that price anchoring that can happen. Oh, I could have bought NVIDIA at $30, right?
I know.
And now it's at 90. Why would I buy it here? It's like, what does $30 have to do with 90, right? It can go from 90 to 200, which it did, right? So the market's always looking out ahead. The market's always right. And if it's going to give you an opportunity to get into it again, yeah, if it's still a great company, a lot of times I'll take a shot and I'll see what happens because I know how to manage my risk, right? And you have to, it's just a process. You just keep learning it. One kind of similar thing for me on just missing out or really getting out of it way too early was Apple in 2004. Now, if you have the How to Make Money in Stocks book or you've seen any examples of a cup with handle, chances are you've seen the Apple 2004 cup with handle when it came out with the iPod. Well, I bought it at that point, and I sold out really, really soon. I had my little profit. I took it, and the stock went, I think from a price adjusted, I'm looking at a monthly chart here, it went from a price adjusted like $2 to $200 mm-hmm. at that point. And this one I still lose sleep over because I was like, yeah, they kind of had this new iPod. I saw the big volume. I saw the cup with handle. This is when I was a customer years ago. And I knew that it had the potential. And I even had a stop. I said, I bought it around like $26 or $25. And I said, okay, if I'll sell if it goes under $24. And it never went under $24. But I still sold, right? Mm. So that's, you know, just breaking a rule right there. I didn't even sell it at 20%. I sold way too before that. You know, that one I really do lose sleep over this one. And also anytime we have a seminar and we show that example, you know, I have to wipe a tear away from that, just what could have been, because that could have been a big time game changer for me.
Yeah. And I know obviously it's case on a case by case basis, but do you think now you decide to take more partial profits at that 20% profit taking zone, or how do you approach taking profits now because of that? I mean, clearly there's some that you just want to get out of, but
right.
Letting your winners run.
Yeah, no, it's a good question. I mean, for any stock that I think is a game-changing stock, I'll at 20%, I'll take some partial profits. I'm not going to hold the full position and try to go for the full run. Some people do that. For me, I've found that it works better to take something off at that 20%. And so if you say you sell half, right? If you sell half at 20%, and it goes down, you're in the mentality that, okay, at least I sold half. Mm-hmm. If it goes up,
right,
you're in the mentality that at least I held half, right? So I like that. I think that's kind of a good balance there. And now, if it now comes back into the 10-week line and starts building a new base, I can start buying it back again. So, yeah, so for those that's like an NVIDIA, like a lot of like, especially 2017, but even most of 2016, I had some shares of NVIDIA throughout a lot of that run. So,
and
yeah.
See what I did there? I started asking you questions.
I know. It's like, it is.
Hijacked it.
Exactly. That was a jiu-jitsu move right there. You just spun it right around me. But the key here is that when you're doing this, when you're learning our investment strategy, you are going to make a lot of mistakes, okay? We're all human, and you have to recognize that and also realize that there are learning opportunities in those mistakes. So make those mistakes as soon as possible, learn from them, and then you're going to get through that learning curve a lot quicker. I mean, the great thing with Alyssa, you're just beginning, right? You're just beginning your investing cycle. And so the fact that you made a number of these mistakes and they're already so memorable, you're gonna remember those in the next cycle and when you have one of those next great winners, and you won't make that same mistake again.
Yeah, that's right.
Coming up next, we're going to talk about current stocks, and also maybe we'll get a little bit more heads up on Alyssa's new show. So stay tuned. Hey everyone, it's Arusha here. Now first, I want to thank everyone for listening to the show. We are always interested in hearing your feedback, and we've created a survey to get your thoughts. We want to know what you like about the show, what you don't like about the show, and also how we can improve. So if you're interested in taking this survey, please go to investors.com/podcastsurvey to give us your thoughts. Alyssa Quorum is with us on Investing with IBD. And so, Alyssa, let's get into some current stocks. We are in a market correction, but there are some current stocks that are setting up. And the first one is Pinterest.
Yeah.
Ticker symbol P-I-N-S. And now it's interesting the way they describe themselves, a visual discovery engine.
Ooh.
It's very, very, very exciting, I think. But it's a digital scrapbook, right?
Right.
It's kind of taking that scrapbook concept and applying it to the web. They've been around for a number of years now. I never understood them until I started to play around with them a few months ago when they went public.
Yeah.
And I thought that, you know, it's kind of interesting what they do there.
Yeah, my sister-in-law is a big Pinterest person. I have two nephews. They're pretty young, 6 years old and 3 years old. And so she gets a lot of ideas for, you know, for the holidays, for their Christmas card, different photo shoot ideas or decor around the house or Halloween costumes for the kids. So there's a lot of great ideas like that, recipe ideas, inspirational quotes.
Yeah.
So it sounds like they are really growing their user base as well.
Yeah, it looks like this past quarter, their monthly average users was up 30%. I think the quarter before it might have been up like 21%. Versus like a Facebook these days is like single digits and stuff like that. So it is an exciting growth idea within the social network space. Revenue increased 62%. Like a lot of other tech companies these days, they don't have many earnings or much earnings.
Right.
But they're also expanding internationally too. So they're taking this concept and they're able to be in a cookie cutter fashion, apply it to other markets, and it's working.
Yeah. And one more note on the revenue front. If you're on there, I mean, it's really cool actually how they're integrating their advertising and targeting their ads. And from what I can see, you know, there's a bunch of different tiles on there with different things. You can, you know, make your own collections and do your own searches. And so they're all kind of up there as a collage. But as you're scrolling, from what I can see, you can't really scroll down without seeing at least one ad at all times.
Yeah.
And also the way that they're targeting them seems pretty appealing for advertisers, because with the things that you're searching, they're likely guessing your gender, your age range, your interests,
exactly,
all of those things.
Yeah. No, so it's a really, really interesting concept. They reported earnings last week and they had an earnings gap too. So a massive, massive earnings gap. And on the Marketsmith charts, a pattern recognition is recognizing a big cup here. So on that earnings gap, they're up 18%, 871% volume over normal. So the average is a huge, huge move. And so now it looks like they're building a handle.
Mm-hmm.
And you're in a correction, so it's not a, you know, runaway type of environment right now. So it's just kind of pulling back, building the handle, shaking out some people who might have bought on near the highs at that point. But it's just kind of doing its thing right now. But right near new highs in a correction, that's kind of what we want to see. Because now if the market comes out of this correction, you would expect that this should be one of the first stocks to break out.
Right. Yeah. A really good name for the watch list. It's about 9% below that potential buy point there. And we don't have to linger on this too long, but I think it is worth noting again, we did have an entire, we've had several shows all about IPO stocks, but with Pinterest, I mean, how many up days in a row did we see at the start of this thing, you know, going from 25 to 35 in such a short time frame? But this is why you don't want to chase a stock.
Right. Yes. It's absolutely true. It didn't even form. Usually for the earliest thing we'll look for an IPO is an IPO base. It didn't even form that. It was a rocket ship up, came back, and now it's starting to form a base and showing once again, like you were saying, it's good to be patient and let the stock prove itself. So let's go to the second stock. And the second stock is Five9, ticker symbol FIVN. And this is a cloud stock. And what they're doing using the cloud is they're reinventing the phone service for call centers. So they're building a better mousetrap, right? Before, you're just getting the regular phones. And we use the service here for our customer service calls at IBD. We transitioned to Five9 maybe a year and a half ago or so. And it's you can take the calls from anywhere. You don't have to actually be in the office. You can actually log in anywhere, you know, with a laptop or even a mobile app and take calls. It integrates with a lot of other services like Salesforce. So now what's neat is when a customer calls in, you get all of this data. You immediately see what the customer name is, you know, what their email address is, what products they subscribe to.
Yeah, that makes it way better for them and for the company trying to help them.
Exactly. The experience is much, much better. For now, the customers are 5.9. They have high customer retention rates because they're just making life easier.
Yeah.
You know, for all of their customers. And now they formed a consolidation. They reported earnings and they broke out of their consolidation after earnings. So they had an earnings gap too.
Yeah, that's right. There's a little bit of a theme here today with these earnings gaps.
That's right. So they had an earnings gap. They pulled in as the market got worse. And now they're kind of re-breaking out. So they're out of that consolidation. The pivot point, the kind of the buy area is 5790. They're 5805. So they finished above it. Another stock that's trying to resist this correction, trying to resist the downtrend. And their earnings, for the most part, triple-digit earnings this past quarter, 82% year-over-year. And their sales have been very, very consistent, either in the high 20s or 30s. It seems like a lot of companies are switching over to their service.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the enterprise software industry group, very strong. So it's always good to be looking at stocks that are from a strong industry group, and we have that with 5.9.
Exactly. They're currently ranked number 6, the computer software industry group, and a lot of great participants or industry group members that have done very, very well this year. So 5.9, that's another one to keep your eye on. Now, one thing here, they have gone on a really, really long run. They've been running for a few years, just consistently moving up in a nice uptrend. And if you want to talk about late stage basis,
oh yeah,
we talk about late stage basis usually. Very shortly, when stocks move, they'll run up, they'll form a base, they'll break out, they'll run up again, form another base. After they do this 3 or 4 times, we call it like a stage 3 or stage 4 base. We'll say, it's probably getting a little bit tired. The odds of them working are a little bit less at this one. Doesn't necessarily mean they can't work. They're just the risk is a little bit higher.
Right. It's really surprising that it never undercut the
low.
Yeah, the low of the prior base.
Exactly. But 5.9 is a stage 7 base.
That's
pretty
don't
high.
Don't see that too often.
Yeah, but sometimes there's another stock, I think it was TAL Education a couple of years ago. I think it got up to like a stage 9, stage 10. So there are a few that can really, really kind of buck the trend, and they're so strong they never undercut a support area, like Alyssa said. But that's one thing to keep in mind. It's been running for a long time. So whenever I try a later stage base, I'll just go in smaller and I'll be quicker to get out of them. Okay, so I won't avoid them, but I'm just going to be, I know the risk is higher, so I'm going to be much quicker to get out of them if they start going against me.
Yeah, that's a good point. But I think it's also worth noting once again that we are still in a correction. So even though it looks like it's in a buy zone right now,
that's true.
We would not be advising anyone aggressively buying right now.
Exactly. You want to wait for the market. In the end, the market is 50% of the game. If you get the market uptrend going right, now you've dramatically improved your odds if you're buying an uptrend. So save yourself the hassle of learning the hard way and having some regrets on your end. You're better off just sticking with uptrends on this. Now, the third and final stock is Medpace and ticker symbol MEDP. And now these guys are an interesting company. They're what you call a full-service clinical research organization, a CRO. And what they do is they help a number of these biotech companies or pharmaceutical companies go through the approval process. That's obviously a very intensive type of task for a lot of companies to take. So a lot of these drug companies are outsourcing that process and using a CRO or a clinical research organization to help them move through that process and be organized during that time. So these guys are one of the a number of CROs that are in the industry, and a number of these are publicly traded companies, and a number of them have been doing well. And this is a market size that is expected to reach $1.62 billion by 2025. So it's a nice growing market. And as we know, there's so much innovation going on in the medical space right now with and a lot of these smaller, mid-sized biopharma companies, they're growing. They want to go public, or they want to release more, get more drugs or medical devices approved. And so they're using companies like Medpace to take them through that process. So business is pretty good for these guys.
Yeah, and I think it's especially notable that we saw accelerating growth on the top and bottom lines in the most recent quarter, with earnings up 33%, sales up 26%. We like seeing, ideally, at least 25% growth for those metrics, and acceleration is even better. So we're seeing that here.
You're getting that momentum, and also on the momentum on the actual technical side, you add another earnings gap. So 3 for 3 for the current stocks today. This was a breakaway gap coming out of a cup, and they've been pulling. So they, on that day when they reported earnings, they jumped 17.6%. The volume was 603% above average volume. So we used the 50-day average volume as kind of the guide for that, for normal and abnormal trading. Mm-hmm. And so they jumped up a couple of weeks ago. Now they're pulling back gently near the top of that kind of 5% area where we'd consider getting to the stock.
Yeah, I think it's impressive that it's pretty much been able to hold the bulk of those gains. Yep. From the gap up, even with the broader market headwinds that we're seeing right now, that relative strength line holding near highs. And I think it even may have hit a new high when the market was hitting that low on Monday. So it's pretty strong.
Yeah. And they're showing divergence, right? And this is what we want to see. We want to figure out what are the stocks that are near new highs that are resisting the downtrend the best, because once this market turns around, a lot of times those are going to be the ones that continue to move higher. And that's leadership right there. And relative strength, that's a huge part of our strategy, and we always try to keep an eye. So those are three stocks that are showing some great relative strength and are near new highs. So make sure you put them on your watches and do some research and see if that's they're right for you.
All right. Yeah. And speaking of relative strength, with this show that we're doing, I was able to speak with Jay Gragnani. He's the head of research at Nasdaq Dorsey Wright. And relative strength is a huge component of their strategy as well. And they're really looking at the technicals, whereas we look at fundamentals and technicals together. They're really looking at those technicals. So relative strength, a big part of what they do. So that was really interesting to hear that piece of it from them.
Yeah, and they use point and figure charts to help them, to tell them when to get in, when to get out of stocks. I had the opportunity to meet Tom Dorsey, who was the Dorsey of the Dorsey and Wright,
right?
A number of months ago, and a great, great speaker and a true innovator in the industry. And hopefully one day we can get him on the podcast here. But yeah, it's pretty amazing what he's done, and it just goes to show you, you know, you just have to figure out a strategy that works for you in the market, and then just keep working on it, right? And develop an expertise on it. And even same thing with us, with the Canned Slim strategy, this growth strategy that we talk about every week on the podcast. Learn the concepts, learn the rules, and then make it your own. Write some rules for your own personality and make it your own, because you're going to do better at some stocks than other stocks.
Mm-hmm, that's right. And with relative strength, that's definitely, you know, one of the confirming indicators that we use, because you want to be buying stocks that are already headed in the right direction. You want that leadership, as you mentioned. So I'd say, in addition to looking at these chart patterns to help you with buying and selling, that relative strength line, you can definitely leverage that to your benefit.
Absolutely. I mean, the more I've studied this, the more I realize that relative strength line is incredibly important.
So, it's your friend.
Exactly. So thanks, Alyssa, for being on the show. It was great having you.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Enjoyed it.
And good luck on your new show.
Thank you.
And that's going to be on this next Monday, every Monday.
That's right. Yeah. So we had our premiere episode this Monday, and next week we'll be doing one again. And it's all about the software sector. So we just talked about Five9. So we'll be talking about all the leaders in the software sector and also taking a look at one of the cloud software ETFs. So we'll be getting a look at a few individual names, of course, taking a look at the broader market through our lens and a technical perspective, but then also taking a look at the ETF side of things and really the trend. Why is software such the standout group that it is this year?
Right.
So it'll be fun.
And how can they find the show?
They can go to investors.com/investing strategies.
Excellent. Thanks, Alyssa. And you definitely want to check that out. So that's it for this week on Investing with IBD. Next week, we are going to have Amy Smith on the show. And she is a good friend of IBD, a longtime employee of IBD. And she's also a national speaker, author, and also former host of the very popular IBD Investing show that was on for many, many years. So that's it. I'm Arusha Pierce, and thanks for listening. And for this week's notes and charts, make sure to go to investors.com/podcast, where you'll find details for each episode in the podcast episode section. And make sure to subscribe, rate, and review our podcast if you haven't already. We'd really appreciate it. You can also send us your questions and comments to investingpodcast@investors.com. We would love to hear from you and may use your comments on an upcoming episode. This podcast is for informational and educational purposes only, and nothing should be construed as a recommendation to buy, hold, or sell any securities. Make sure to consider consulting with your financial advisor before making any investment decisions.